This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on a rainy, gloomy Tuesday afternoon, September 24th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Several Chicago and Illinois schools are on the U.S. News and World Report annual list of best colleges. We'll take a closer look in our next segment. But right now, reports on home prices and consumer confidence lead today's data. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home is Bob Bruska, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And this is the largest drop in the conference index since August of 2021. And once again, jobs and inflation weighing on the consumer's mind.
Yeah, well, how about that? And what are the Fed's two objectives? Jobs and inflation. So it doesn't look like it's being very effective in this manner. When we look at the confidence index, one of the things to recognize about August is they revised it up. So they revised the August number up, and this makes the September decline deeper than what we thought it would be. But it's still not a good development. You've got a decline in confidence. You've got a decline in the assessment of the present situation that's really quite severe, dropping that index of 10 points. And you've got a decline in expectations. And, of course, in that other report, that home price report, you've got the year-over-year increase in home prices falling from, you know, a 5.3% year-over-year gain to a 4.5% gain. So home prices are slowing down. And, you know, I don't know what you say about that. Is that good or is that bad? If you own a house, your house price isn't going up as fast. So you're trying to buy a house, that means they're not running away from you as fast as they used to. So, you know, the economic data always provides a little bit of a double-edged sword.
And then when it comes to the consumer confidence index, I mean, obviously there's a lot of data for economists to sift through on a daily basis. But what value does it provide to an economist as they're trying to get the present state of the economy? Because there are a lot of other reports that are a lot more positive and a lot more sunny than how the consumer is viewing the economy as interpreted by this report.
Right. Well, you know, we have two main consumer confidence reports. We've got this one from the Conference Board, which is very labor market centric. So when they say that this report weakened because of the labor market, well, of course it did. That's what this report focuses on. The Michigan report looks more broadly at other things and about perceptions and expectations to the future and people's financial condition and other things. And the Michigan survey has been a lot weaker all the way through. This Conference Board index is not as weak as the Michigan index is. As if you take the two indices over a period of time and you rank them, you know, putting the level of the index aside, which doesn't mean anything, but if you rank them compared to where they have been, the Michigan index is, relatively speaking, much, much weaker than the Conference Board index. So because we're getting some softening in the labor market, you're getting some softening in this Conference Board index. To economists, what does it mean? Well, really not that much. You know, this doesn't really help you explain consumer spending that much, but it does tell you something about the consumer's mood. And you don't want to ignore it. On the other hand, as a quantitative piece of information, it doesn't exactly map into consumer spending in a percentage term, if that's what you're looking for.
And then very quickly, Bob, on the home prices front, I mean, obviously, if you are looking for a home, to see that housing prices are hitting new highs over the summer is a source of frustration. But if you own a home and you don't plan on moving out or you want to sell it, to see the value of your asset reach potentially new highs has got to be some rather encouraging news to you as the homeowner.
Yeah, well, I look at this report differently. I look at the rate of change in housing prices, and the rate of change is slowing. And so that to me is the is the important way to look at this report. Over time, prices rise. You know, the Fed is charged with price stability, but price stability means keeping inflation crawling at a slower pace. So prices are always going up. So, you know, everything should always be going up and setting new records. I mean, that's a given. But what's interesting here is that the increase in home prices is slowing, and I think that's good news for people.
Bob Bruska, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Thank you for joining us today.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
U.S. News and World Report out with its rankings of the best colleges for 2025. Let's talk about the top schools and how some local schools fared. We're joined by Lamont Jones, Managing Editor for Education with U.S. News and World Report based in New York. Lamont, thank you for joining us today. And how did some of the Illinois or Chicago area schools fare on your latest rankings?
Thanks for having us. A number of those schools in that area ranked well. For example, Northwestern achieved an all-time high rank of number six, a tie for number six, up from a tie at number nine in the prior edition. And the school continues to improve its performance on outcome measures like average six-year graduation rates, first-year student retention rates, very important metrics. University of Chicago went up one spot to number 11, tied with Cornell University. University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign is number 33 and tied up with Georgia Tech and UC Irvine and UC Davis. Also want to mention that University of Illinois Chicago is up one spot in terms of top public schools to number 39, and Urbana-Champaign is up three spots to number nine for top public schools.
It was 27 or 28 years ago, Lamont, when I started my college selection journey that led me to Marquette University. And in the 90s, U.S. News and World Report, the list of the best colleges, I mean, that was the gold standard back then for determining colleges, along with the Princeton Review. What is it about your list that gives it credibility year after year?
This is our 40th year doing the rankings. I was actually a senior in high school when we had our first rankings at U.S. News. And we have really a time-tested methodology. We keep the focus on the information that is important for the students and their families who are making one of the most important decisions, one of the most expensive decisions up there with buying a house in their lives. So we believe that as part of our mission for us to help gather the information that's important to students about academic excellence, about how schools are helping students with upward social mobility, how well schools are attracting and retaining and graduating lower income students, improving their lives over the course of time with a college choice. So we think our rankings are a great starting point for anybody interested in going to college. We have all this information we've gathered. We have a methodology that looks at key factors to help them make the best decisions they can for themselves.
And has the criteria changed over the years as the college conversation, has it evolved over time?
Yes, it has evolved over time. And in fact, one of the greater emphases in recent years has been on the social mobility factors such as how many Pell Grant eligible students, which are federal grants for lower income students, how much schools attract those students, retain them, and graduate them. So those kinds of factors are about half of the rankings weighted factors and methodologies. So there's a big influence we have on in recent years on postgraduate outcomes, you know, graduation rates, indebtedness when students get out of school. These are really key factors, and those have, yes, helped shape how we have evolved the rankings to meet needs.
Lamont Jones, Managing Editor for Education, U.S. News and World Report in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, a multi-billion dollar plan to give movie theaters in North America a major makeover.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Competition from streaming is motivating movie theaters to upgrade the experience. Let's learn more from Paul DeGarabedian, Senior Media Analyst for the box office tracking company Comscore, based in Los Angeles. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And what are some of the movie theater chains that are taking part in this upgrade initiative? And what are some of the ideas they have in the pipeline?
Well, I think it's really about just upgrading the entire movie theater experience. And the National Association of Theater Owners, NATO, recognizes that this competition for consumers' hard-earned dollars is fiercer than ever. That's a quote from them. And they are creating, through these renovations, a tangible way for moviegoers to have that great experience in the movie theater. So they're going to modernize and improve. And you know, these are some of the biggest theater chains that are going to be involved in this. AMC, Cinemark, Regal, these are huge theater chains. And, you know, Alamo Drafthouse and iPic Theaters are luxury brands that have really stepped up the game. So I think it's just about giving people even more of a reason to go to the movie theater and just make modernizing that experience.
And this is a $2.2 billion effort. And Paul, you and I have talked about this before, and that this is part of a process that has been going on since the early 1950s. Ever since TV came into the entertainment equation, the movie theater and the movie industry has been doing what it can to deliver an experience you could not get at home. And the most tangible evidence, even going back to the 50s, was a lot of the old movie houses went away because they could not keep up. And as a result, you had THX sound, you had digital delivery, you had digital projection. And you mentioned you have these places like Alamo Drafthouse where they serve you at your seat as opposed to just getting popcorn and candy.
Absolutely, Rob. And the thing is, it's that, you know, that in-theater experience has to differentiate itself from the home experience. And that's to get people off the couch, go out to the movie theater. When you walk into that movie theater, you want to feel like you're going somewhere special. And if you're feeling like it's the same old experience that hasn't been updated, you might stay home. A big part of going to the movies, of course, is the movie on the big screen itself. But the experiential part of this is huge. And so that $2.2 billion plan to like really renovate and modernize theaters shows so much confidence in the movie theater experience. And admittedly, September, other than Beetlejuice, been a rather sleepy month at the box office, but that's the nature of the business, the cyclical nature of it. And you just wait till we have Joker, and we have later in November and December, Moana 2, Gladiator 2, Wicked, and a host of great indie movies as well that I think are going to really drive people to the movie theater, drive them to the movie theater, and that's really a big deal. But creating the best possible environment for the moviegoers is as important as the movies themselves.
Paul DeGarabedian, senior media analyst for the box office tracking company Comscore, based in Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Travel Tuesday, understanding what goes into government travel warnings and how you should respond to them.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. There are concerns about safety at a school in the western suburbs. President Biden presents his final speech to the UN General Assembly. In Travel Tuesday, the real truth when it comes to government-issued travel warnings, and Beyonce teaming up with an iconic American fashion brand. WBBM Business, the markets are slightly higher. The Dow is up 15 points. The NASDAQ is up 97. The S&P 500 is up 11. We have 65 degrees right now in Chicago, and with some strong thunderstorms pushing through, including a tornado warning.
Breaking news, from News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
And let's get right to AccuWeather senior meteorologist Brian Thompson, who's live with the latest information about the tornado warning now in effect for parts of the Chicago area. Brian?
Yeah, Rob, that tornado warning in effect for southern parts of Cook County until 12:45. This is for a storm that's near the Madison area. There's a few areas of some weak rotation showing up on Doppler radar, and that's why this warning was issued. So not a confirmed tornado, but radar is indicating some rotation within the storm, so there is the potential for a tornado. And this includes areas like Madison, Flossmoor, Homewood, up toward Hazelcrest, even around Chicago Heights, where we have some rain falling now, but again, the potential for an isolated tornado touching down. down perhaps with some of this rotation we're seeing. The storm's moving off to the east pretty slowly at about 10 miles per hour. So again, a tornado warning for southern Cook County until 12:45. Brian Thompson, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
And live interactive radar is available right now under the weather tab at WBBMNewsRadio.com. A series of incidents, including email threats, upsetting some parents in Glen Ellen.
It all started on September 10th when the principal of Glenbard East High School says a loaded gun was found in a school bathroom. In the days following, two more incidents occurred, one via social media. Glenbard East parent Katie LeCount tells CBS News Chicago that she does not feel students are safe.
Especially when three incidents have happened in a matter of 2 weeks. This could have turned out a lot worse than it did.
At a board meeting, parent Carmel Ludwig said the school needs to do more to protect students.
Find some dollars for metal detectors. I would say clear backpacks, things that are going to help keep our students safe.
Officials say a student was identified and detained for leaving the gun in the bathroom, and the social media threat was unfounded. This comes as nearly two dozen schools in the Chicago area have experienced online threats. Carolina Garibay, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
It's 12:33 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher this afternoon. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Ross Mayfield, investment strategy analyst at Baird in Louisville, Kentucky. Ross, thank you for joining us today. And what are some of the market movers today, if at all? Because it's been rather muted couple of trading days coming off those big swings on Friday and Monday.
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of a consolidation period here as the market catches its breath and gets its bearings in order after the Fed makes the big rate cut last week. You know, in a lot of ways, the market had been anticipating that move all year. We spent a lot of breath talking about the Fed. So I think there's a bit of a, you know, maybe a hangover, just a quiet couple of days getting accustomed to the new world we're in of Fed rate cuts. You know, a few things today I think are worth keeping an eye on. There was a consumer confidence number that was pretty dour, a pretty big miss for expectations and one of the lowest prints in the last several years. Obviously, in a consumer economy here where the labor market and the consumer do most of the driving, you pay attention a little closely when things like that pop up, and you just make sure that, you know, it's maybe more noise than actual trend, but something to keep an eye on there.
And how much of that consumer confidence report might have been a reflection of some stories that came out over the summer, especially when we saw that one-week jobs report that triggered a major sell-off, that maybe that kind of bled into people's perceptions about the economy, even though they may have continued spending and living their life like things were a lot better than they are?
Yeah, we do definitely see evidence of that. And in this report today, you can see the comments about the labor market are describing it as a more challenging environment than it's been in the last couple of years. Jobs are harder to get. Wage growth is still solid, but it's down pretty meaningfully. So you're seeing a looser labor market, and that is, you know, part of the reason the Fed raises interest rates to kind of cool things off. I also think, you know, as we get closer to an election, there's just a kind of an angst and an uncertainty that comes over investors and consumers, even if it's not necessarily the main driver of the market. I think it certainly is something that can show up in these types of sentiment survey reports, the softer data, the more qualitative data that we look at.
China is doing what it can to stimulate growth in its economy. And if the Chinese economic engine slows down or continues to stay slow as they recover from draconian COVID shutdowns, how much of a spillover effect would that have on the world economy and on the American economy?
Well, I think if there's one thing you can be somewhat excited about for the U.S. economy over the last couple of years is that China has been in really dire straits. And there has probably been some spillover in the U.S. And I would say, you know, company specific, if that company has a lot of operations or caters to the Chinese consumer, probably hit a little bit harder. But China has been in its worst growth environment in 30 plus years. And the U.S. has continued to have a strong economic environment. So the spillover there has not been maybe as large as you would have expected if you had told folks 2 years ago how bad the China economic picture would be right now. They are aggressively dumping stimulus of all sorts onto their economy, and I would say at this point with limited impact. You know, they're kind of hard pressed because they have so much debt. They have such a property bubble that's kind of deflating as we speak. But they're doing what they can. And, you know, I think the thing, if you're a U.S. investor, U.S. takeaway from this is that the spillover has not been maybe as robust as people would have expected in such a globalized world.
Ross Mayfield, investment strategy analyst at Baird in Louisville, Kentucky, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, a discussion of government warnings that urge you not to take a trip to certain places.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. We often hear about the government issuing travel warnings and safety alerts, but should that completely rule out a trip to one of those places? We welcome in Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher of JoeSentMe.com, based in New York. Joe, thank you for joining us today. Now, when you see a travel warning or a travel advisory from the State Department, what is a typical travel warning or advisory, and what factors into the State Department's thinking?
Well, when you do it, Rob, when you hear about something like this where the State Department says, don't go here or beware of crime here, you shouldn't ignore it. But you need to, A, read carefully what they say, because they try to be exact in what their complaints are and their fears are. And you also read further to see where the issues might be. It might not even be in the part of a country that you're going to.
And just looking at the website right now, which travel.state.gov, the list of travel advisories or areas under a travel advisory, it is a 5-page list. It goes on and on. And there are different levels of danger or potential danger in the judgment of the State Department to you. From level 1, exercise normal precautions, to level 4, which is just don't go. And that's one that's the advisory for Belarus.
Exactly. I wouldn't be going to Beirut today, you know? I mean, but what I think you have to pay attention to, and you said it, level 1 is advise and prepare usual precautions. That's where travelers tend to actually screw up, at the very lowest level. They go to a place, it could be Chicago, it could be New York, it could be Belarus, or it could be Britain. And they suspend what we used to say in writing fiction, suspend your disbelief. Just because you're in another place that's not your hometown doesn't mean you're safe. Doesn't mean you should not pay attention when you walk into an ATM and then come out. That's the biggest problem travelers tend to have, is they think they're immune because they're a traveler. And they're not immune. In some cases, they're actually more at risk. But most of the time, it's just they're just not paying attention.
And one thing that's notable here is that some of the countries that do have State Department travel advisories above level 1, which is the exercise normal precautions, or a war-torn region of the world, which usually falls under level 4, don't go. There's a country like Italy, level 2, exercise increased caution, and that is due to a threat of terrorism.
Right. Now I did not check. I'm going to Italy in 2 weeks. I go to Italy all the time, so I know what I'm doing.
Keep both eyes open, Joe.
But I thought it was actually going to be about pickpocketing and those kind of things, because that's actually been on the rise. But let me give you another example. At the end of January, the State Department said, you want to beware in Nassau, the Bahamas, because there have been 18 murders in January. Now, that's concerning, except I just checked the numbers for Chicago, and so according to the Chicago Police Department, there have been 422 murders in Chicago this year. That's more than twice on average per month than the Bahamas. Do you think Chicago's unsafe for visitors? I don't think it is, and I don't think Nassau or the Bahamas is unsafe either, but you should pay attention. You cannot make believe that you're immune because you're a tourist. And that's what always becomes the problem, is travelers just don't pay attention to the normal precautions.
And it just seems that if you have good old-fashioned street smarts as an American walking through an American city, Joe, chances are that level of street smarts probably translates pretty well to any other city in the world, regardless of language or culture.
That's generally true. And as I say, it comes down to, gee, what precautions do you take when you walk into an ATM or go to an ATM? You know, you don't flash your money around. Tourists, American tourists especially, are more obvious in a lot of European places. Americans tend to do things Europeans don't. Sometimes it's sandals and shorts in the summer months, you know. So be aware of that, that there is some crime aimed at tourism and tourists. But if you take, as you say, the standard precaution, you know, when you leave your hotel room, make sure your valuables are locked up in the safe, those kind of things, you'll generally be fine. But start with reading what the State Department says, then maybe add in some English language media. They have this wonderful thing now called Google, where you can Google almost anything, including crime in whatever country you're going to. Know what's happening, and then just be aware of your surroundings.
Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher, joesentme.com.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words, this is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Levi Strauss is teasing a potential partnership with Beyonce through an Instagram post. Let's examine the possibility of such a collaboration with Jennifer Waters, Chicago-based business reporter. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today.
And hey,
celebrity endorsements of product is nothing new, and it's especially common in the world of blue jeans. I mean, we're going back to, you know, Brooke Shields and Calvin Klein. I heard a commercial not too long ago, Debbie Harry of Blondie pushing some designer brand of jeans in 1980. What makes this Beyonce Levi's collaboration innovative?
Well, for starters, it's Beyonce. I mean, it's Beyonce and her beehive. She, you know, she and Taylor Swift are the two superstar divas, this, you know, of late. So that's, you know, that's one thing, you know, her influence. And it's not that she hasn't influenced fashion before, but just since she released her album, Cowboy Carter, she has just been, you've seen her dressed with cowboys, pants on, chaps, I mean, cowboy hats, bolos. You know, and she's dressing in more of a masculine look than a feminine, you know, with the denim skirts and such. But that, I expect that to be, we'll see more of that going forward. But you also see what's become known as cowboy core now, which is a fashion genre. Kim Kardashian wore a cowboy hat at the Super Bowl, for example. Venus Williams was in cowboy boots when she was doing a talk about art collecting at the Met. So you can't, you have to realize that's been a Beyonce effect, and that's going to continue. We're even seeing it in home decor too, a cowboy core, which Ralph Lauren has been doing that for what seems like forever, but we're seeing much more Western inspired design in home decor as well.
And it also seems like maybe denim is once again at the top of the hype cycle because, you know, going back 40 years, it was John Travolta and the movie Urban Cowboy that made country Western palatable to city audiences and suburban audiences. And seems like Beyonce is carrying on that tradition.
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. You know, we've had, like, really, it's been about the last 10 years or so that we've seen a lot of rock stars, you know, musicians move over to cowboy. And then that's kind of helped inspired the growth of, you know, denim and such that too. I mean, denim increases, there's a fashion search engine called Lyst, and they say there's a 51% increase in searches for cowboy boots. Searches for Levi's jeans since her album dropped, and she's got a song on there called Levi's. Those have gone 31% just since the album dropped, and a 57% increase featuring the keyword cowboy. So you really see how that is, and you see the denim effect on that. And I really think, you know, you also are seeing other brands jump into denim too. American Eagle, Abercrombie & Fitch, for example, are jumping on it. And I think you're going to continue to see it too. Even Louis Vuitton men's collection is going into a deeper kind of denim look.
Jennifer Waters, Chicago-based business reporter, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour.